thinning its weight. Now, I checked it out with a reliable medium, and Mary Pinchot, I hate to inform you, was not murdered. I mean, it was not a conspiracy. It was just an asshole in the park killed her, and wasn't anything to do with conspiracy.
That's not what her husband said.
I know, but they try to dramatize it. Anyways, I cannot prove what I said, but I've checked a lot of this stuff out through the astral plane, through the medium of the evergreen. But I'm just looking at the Wikipedia on Gottlieb.
When her ex-husband was in the hospital near the end of his life, he was interviewed and he was asked who killed Mary. And he said, the same sons of bitches who killed JFK. That's a direct quote.
Well, you know who that was? That was Henry Kissinger. It comes back to your neighborhood. Henry Kissinger, yes, he wasn't involved with it, but people he worked for did it. So they don't go in. They have MK Ultra. They don't go into what happened to him after he got fired. I mean, that's hidden. And we're talking about him getting fired in the... I guess MK Ultra comes out in the mid-70s. I think that's when it was exposed. And yeah, it brought to wide public attention in 75. So then he got in trouble. So you're talking about him forming commune in the late 70s, you know, early 80s.
No, probably in the 80s.
Wow. And that's when no one wanted to hear about LSD, you know, so it wouldn't be really on the radar in terms of the mainstream media. They wouldn't care that he became a hippie guru. But I want to go back to the volcanic act. The myth is that the volcanic smoke or something come out of the...
Well, look at the Oracle of Delphi.
On Wikipedia? Look it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, now the...
Because there's been a lot of controversy through the years about whether there was, you know, some kind of psychedelic thing involved or not. And according to Ed, the most recent evidence is yes.
Right, I'm thinking of what's it called, chymalin? What's the stuff that Socrates was given? Chymalin?
What's it called? It's called...
Okay, we'll get back to that. It says here, modern town in Greece on the southwestern spur of Mount Parnassus. It was the site of the Delphic Oracle. So I'm going to click on that. It says the most important oracle in the classical world. The Pythia was the priestess presiding over the oracle. The Pythia was widely credited with giving prophecies inspired by Apollo, giving her a prominence unusual for a woman in male-dominated ancient Greece. It was established in 8th century B.C. Its last recorded response was given in 393 A.D., when the Emperor Theodosius I ordered pagan temples to cease operation. During this period, the Delphic Oracle was the most prestigious and authoritative oracle in the Greek world. Now, you know, this, I mean, she probably was a medium, and just like we have lots of mediums today now, because we're in the post-literate society, back then, pre-literate, it was a normal factor of consciousness that people going into it. So it says, it is often said that the Pythia, that's what they call it, the Pythia, delivered oracles in a frenzied state induced by vapors rising from the ground.
Right.
And that she spoke gibberish, which priests reshaped into the enigmatic prophecies preserved in Greek literature.
Exactly.
It says, this picture has been challenged by scholars such as Joseph Fontenrose and Lisa Maurizio, who show that the ancient sources uniformly represent the Pythia speaking intelligibly and giving prophecies in her own voice. That would mean like she's a medium. Recent geological investigations have shown that real gas emission from a geologic chasm in the earth could have started the myth of the Delphic Oracle. Some authors suggested the possibility that ethylene gas caused the Pythia's state of inspiration. Other authors inferred instead that methane might have been the gas emitted from the chasm, or CO2 or H2S, arguing that the chasm itself might have been a seismic ground rupture. Okay, so you guys begin with that. And do you, the chymalin, what the heck is that is, what Socrates took? What Socrates wouldn't take was what they would take to get stoned, you know, back then. Where do you go from the oracle? Do you go into the Arago plagues in the Middle Ages?
No, we don't. We go to, like I said, Castaneda, Arto, and Wasson.
Well, go to Hoffman maybe first, or do you go to Arto before?
We go to Hoffman and the bicycle trip, yeah. But that's after Castaneda and so forth.
Well, Castaneda is later. Arto goes running down. Doesn't he get hold of these drugs or mescaline and that in the 30s?
Yes.
And so you actually go. So he's the first 20th century character you do.
We do in one scene. We do Arto, Wasson, and Castaneda.
All together.
But
Castaneda is 10 years after.
Yeah,
Wasson.
Sure. Yeah, that's my... I told you the story, didn't I, about being at the... reading that manuscript.
No. Oh, yeah. Let's.
At Michael Harner's house, and then at Ted Carpenter's house.
Yeah, and Ted gets upset that you've had access to it. But what? Okay, that's Castaneda. That's 768. But what? What is the? You go from the Delphic Oracle. What is the theme in the Arto Wasson Castaneda section?
Well, I mean, we're just kind of depicting the positive and negative history of psychedelic drugs. Mostly in the 20th century, but you know, we're just using the Oracle as a kind of a predecessor.
Okay, so
most everything else is in the 20th century.
So it's
we have Huxley dying,
right?
We have Crick and Watson doing the DNA discovery in the pub, and the guy says you must have been drinking a few beers. He says, a few beers, a few hits of acid.
So the interesting thing is, I'm just looking at Socrates, but you're saying that you're looking at the medium of the main psychedelic medium of LSD and all the urban legends and stories and history around that medium, that chemical medium, right? That's what you're presenting. Well, while we're interviewing you, we're also interviewing Dave Worster.
Uh-huh.
Now, Dave Worster, we've now got up to 13 hours, and he was the one who spread LSD. His scene in Seattle at the Center of Integration in 1957 with Captain Al Hubbard's input, they started it all, and it's not a known story. So someday you've got to listen to these 20 hours it's going to be. And it's another synchronicity. We're interviewing you, dealing with the known history of LSD. At the same time, we're doing Dave Worster, Scott, with Scott Taping, the story of the hidden history of LSD. And it's so detailed that you'd have to take time to listen, but I recommend it. Looking at the Socrates thing, Trial and Death, 1.3 is scanned down. Trial and Death. I want to see if they have the thing that he's given after drinking out, they just say the poison. Anyways, it's the chymalan or something is the substance. Okay, so that's what you're doing.
What it says in English is that he drank. What did he drink? I can't remember his name. It's a much more ordinary word.
I don't know. I had it in my head 3 years ago when I was talking a lot about it with Mark Stallman. And I know that Ed would have, the nonlinear circle, which Ed and Neil were part of, held from 98 to 2000 at Mark's Loft, a lot of this history of LSD was talked about, and I'm sure Ed used whatever he got from Mark. But here we are on LaRouche's birthday, and Mark was the bodyguard of Lynn LaRouche and the one who created. Mark did the research, like Walter, around the same time, a little after, Walter Boert did the research in the National Archives once the MKUltra story came out in the mid-70s. And that led to Walter Boert's book, Operation Mind Control, and his whole authority in that world. And then, at the same time, Mark gave the information to LaRouche, and they put it out in their book called Dope Inc., or Dope Incorporated, and that's where the story that Ken Kesey and the Pranksters and Gregory Bateson were all part of the MKUltra project, and Grateful Dead, too. which I showed you back in May, the day before we came out to California. You were at my place. I showed you that section in the book of Dope Inc., remember?
Right.
But see, LSD in the drug world is a key part of your life. So it's natural you end up doing an opera on it.
That's true.
You would not have predicted 20 years ago that you would be writing an opera on drugs, even though it was such an important part of your life. And all the people your life revolves around all the people in so many ways that were affected by that scene.
Sorry.
Okay, so I want to, I don't know if there's anything else. I want to ask you this. What is an incident or person who keeps popping up in your mind and you wonder why they keep persisting? McLuhan used to say we have memories that return to us all the time. We don't know why those particular memories, often from our childhood, recycle in our brains. It stays there. It comes back often. I'm wondering, of all this data and all these events and tragedies and successes that happened, what is something that you personally are puzzled that drifts through your mind as a memory? I imagine a lot of the stories we talked about drift through your mind, right?
Well, I don't remember my dreams very much, but I know my dreams are inhabited by all kinds of characters that, including my father, including Michael Callahan. I dreamt last night that I was looking for Michael and, some subterranean scene that we were somehow visiting, and I just couldn't find him, right? A lot of appearances and disappearances, but some of the people I wonder about are people who I used to know, and I know they're still alive, and I wonder why we're not in contact.
Yeah, you wonder why they don't want to be in touch, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, why they don't get in touch with me. There are certain people that I try and contact, but, I don't make a big scene if they don't. And once in a while, somebody does contact me. They're not usually the people that I wonder about, though.
I think you said earlier, previous sessions, that if someone doesn't call you, then make an effort in the two-way. You call them, and then they should call you back occasionally. It's two-way.
Yeah, I don't like one-way.
The one-way thing.
Relationships, yeah.
So you're saying that there are some people that should maybe, if they're interested in their lives, call you.
Yeah, I just wonder why they don't. Exactly. And some of them would call me a few years ago, and then they just kind of drop out, and you wonder why.
Well, to me, as people get older, they're gradually becoming detached from life and getting ready to die. It's almost like they're checking out, and they don't want to think about their life in a way. Be reminded of things.
Most of the people I know are younger than I am.
Right. And you're talking about some of those that don't contact you.
Yeah. And It's just trying to stay in touch is. Now, I think the technology has made it more difficult, not easier.
Okay, that brings up two points.
I think I've got right now probably at least 30 emails that I would choose to answer if I could take the time to answer them, And they kind of bother me a little bit that they're resting, on this long list. And some of them, I have to go back two or three weeks in order to find. And it's an effort. Having gone through telephone, telex, right, fax, I don't do fax anymore unless somebody absolutely insists, you know,
yeah.
Pain in the ass. But telex was difficult, right?
It
was
yeah.
Hardly a medium, it's more like a backbreaker. And before that, calling Western Union, right?
Yeah.
My father had these little porcelain switches in his office. One of them was for Western Union. I think one of them was for RCA. And you had to put the switch on, and then the boy would come up in a uniform and take your telegraph to send to somebody.
Yeah.
A telegram, rather. You know, it's... And yet, now, you know, waking up in the morning, what do I do? The first thing when I come downstairs, I look at my new email.
Yes, I go into the bathroom. It's part of your body.
And I go and I get rid of my spam.
Yeah.
I mean, getting rid of spam is like taking a dump.
Yeah.
You're right.
I call it the chip body. It's been added to your chemical body. Now, it's interesting, we're talking about this, about the issue of contact, and that was the poem 45 years ago, Contact, well, what was it? Contact is true love, I forget the...
No, it's the only love.
It's the only love. So that's a dominant memory. You're talking about why people aren't getting in touch with you, why they're not maintaining contact. That's the issue. You still got the same
contact
issue.
Contact is a very electric word, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when contact is made, a spark happens, and the whole word spark is a kind of a spiritual image.
That's right. McLuhan said language is tactile, electricity is tactile, the word has electricity in it.
Yes, I agree with him.
Yeah.
So you agree with him a lot, it seems.
Who, you?
Yeah, it seems I agree with him a lot.
Well, like you came up with Contact, that title, after reading McLuhan, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. And you know, phatic communication, it was a big factor in Finnegan's Wake, in Joyce, and in McLuhan. And that.
Yeah, well, I still can't get over what you told me about the shortwave radio.
Yeah. And my friend is supposed to find... the article, because the James Joyce Quarterly only goes back to 97 in the articles it lists, and I think this article is 95, 96, so I have to remind him, he's an academic, so he can go and do a search and get the stuff that's not listed. But I'm going to come back to this, but side point, dangling here, the popular word you were thinking of in terms of Socrates was hemlock.
Hemlock!
Yeah.
Right.
Now, the word I was thinking of is kaikion.
Yes,
kaikion.
Yeah.
And it says, in preparation for the greater mysteries, initiates would fast and rest and make additional unspecified sacrifices. They also pledged never to reveal the nature of the experiences they had during the greater mysteries. Then they would break the fast by drinking kaikion, K-Y-K-E-O-N, a sacred potion colored purple. Is that why I call my email name purple? A sacred potion called purple and made of meal, water, and mint. And they would, made of meal, what that means.
Meal is flour.
Okay, made of meal, water, and mint, and they would begin their journey into the unknown. Most honored their pledge of secrecy, and there are few reliable accounts of what happened once Initius left the larger crowd.
Well, it depends on what the meal was ground out of. If it was peyote, for instance, or... mushrooms, right?
Right, yeah. Most stories recount great terrors that caused shuddering, sweating, and fear. One poet claimed that he had seen the beginning and ending of life. Now, you do that on LSD or psychedelics.
Yeah, it sounds like they ground up some kind of psychedelic.
Right. The poet learned the poet learned that the whole process was in the form of a circle, starting and ending in the same place and given by God.
The serpent eating its own tail.
Yeah. What happened during the greater mysteries that caused such profound revelation? This is the question. What happened during the greater mysteries that caused such profound revelation to attract the likes of Socrates, Plato, Sophocles, Euripides, and Homer? We'll never know for sure. Just continuing down here. We'll never know for sure. This is a weird text on the next. We're coming around the final turn here. I don't know where it was. It's gone. Kaikion. Put in kike.
Gone but not begotten.
That's interesting. That means we never begin?
It's something.
Okay, it's not... Okay, back to... So, we were talking about the contact and this lingering memory and the lingering emails. That's right. It plagues one. Those people you feel you should contact, reply to, it hangs over you in your daily consciousness when you don't do it.
That's right. I have lists. My lists have lists.
Making... Like a short list. Who will actually be responding?
I mean, it's ridiculous. I have it on the screen, but I don't rely on that. I feel I have to make paper lists, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, going back and forth, and then, you know, the lists disappear, and then they're in folders, and I have lists from 10 years ago, which I don't throw away. And I think one day I'm going to look at this list and there's going to be one thing that's still important. Bullshit.
Just looking at it says.
I told you we have 50. I have 51 boxes now, each with lists inside it, and I have 4,000 plus records on FileMaker Pro. Of what's in these 51 boxes, and now what?
I'm just looking up Kaikion. It says there is a debate about the ingredients of the Kaikion, but this is the, and then they go dot dot dot, that they also shared the sanctuary at Delphi.
Ah.
And I'm trying to find where that sentence is. I click on it and put in.
So Kaikion is K
Y K. K Y K E O N.
Huh.
And it says, I'm trying to find the sentence that the Google just shows you here. The Ascoporia is a vintage and wine pressing festival in thanks to Dionysos, held on the same day as the Pionypsia, when the mysteries of Dionysia were also held. Thus we find the two apparent polar opposites, Dionysus and Apollo, honored on the same day. But we must not forget that they also shared the sanctuary at Delphi. Apollo honored there at Delphi, Apollo honored there in the summer. So it's interesting that the Kaikion overlaps with Delphi.
Yeah.
In the mysteries.
But they still don't know, they don't say what the ingredients were.
Right. Now, there's a friend, Michael Shield, turned me on to a new book. I just got it 2 days ago or last week. It's called Shroom, a cultural...
Sure, what's his name?
Andy Letcher.
Andy Letcher.
Do you know the book?
Yeah, I think so.
It's a cultural history of the magic mushroom.
Yeah, sure.
And Michael told me that it blows the lid off of what's on everybody, that it was all a big lie, and I don't know the details, I haven't read the book, but it's a big exposure, expose of the made-up history of psilocybin. Let me just read you some of the reviews. It says, quote...
I don't remember that part of it, but whatever.
Yeah, well, Michael told me that Wasson made it all up or something.
What do you mean, that he never saw Maria Sabina?
Yeah, it was different from that. Anyways, I haven't read the book, but I'll just, to give a link here, it says, quoting one of the reviews, Andy Letcher has cut through a dense tangle of pseudo-history and urban legend with bracing skepticism, clearing the space for an elegant and authoritative telling of the true story that it conceals. We, and not our prehistoric ancestors, are the true mushroom people. That's one quote. I think what Michael told me was that the psilocybin wasn't there back in the past. It was something created now.
Well, who knows? I mean, you know, then there's that Siberian fly agaric, right?
Yeah.
Well, but, you know.
Okay, so anyways, I'm going to read that one these days. So you know of him, Andy Letcher?
Yeah, and who's the other guy who grows mushrooms? And he's the same guy who does ecological stuff by, you know, growing funguses.
Dennis McKenna?
Yeah, no, not Dennis McKenna.
The brother of Terrence McKenna.
Yeah. No, this guy has a business.
Okay, so why do you bring him up? What's the point?
Well, because he does all kinds of spores and mushrooms and things. I have a catalog of his somewhere. I just can't remember who it is. You know, he can turn, like, a pollution into positive biological growth.
Hmm. Okay.
Very well thought of. Anyway, we're nearly finished tonight.
Right. It says here, towards evening, like Demeter, when she accepted the drink from Metanera, the postulants drink the kykeon, comprising water, barley meal, and pennyroyal.
I don't believe a word.
Right. So back to the lingering memories are people who haven't gotten touched, and they're not necessarily significant people in your life, or just particular people that you would think would get in touch. So
yeah, some of them are significant.
Okay,
I mean they were, you know, and of course, you know.
Can you name a few? We'll put out a plea on the tape.
Yeah.
No?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, there are people like, I don't even know if they're alive, like,
yeah.
There was a poet in San Francisco or in Berkeley, George Late, L-E-I-T-E. One doesn't know what happened to people that one knew long ago. Sometimes you know, last week I was in Woodstock when we didn't do the thing, and I went to, we stopped at a yard sale for Obama, and there was Ed Sanders. Like, I haven't seen Ed for some time. You know, he was one of the thugs, and he's
yeah.
An activist poet. He's a wonderful human being. He was going to email me the next day, which he never did. About some contact. And I don't have his email, so I don't, you know, quite know how to do it. I could reach out to somebody. But he said to me that one of the things that had made him cry in the last few years, it was quite a few years ago, and he was so touched by it, and he's never heard anybody do it, is when at a memorial for Allen Ginsberg at the Woodstock Poetry Festival, I read the last part of Kaddish.
That made him cry.
Yeah, and I was crying. I remember that. And, you know, Allen and I have a very mixed
ambivalent
history. Yes. So
you have an ambivalent relationship with a lot of people, on those on the fame level.
I guess.
Do. You have an ambivalent relationship with any of the famous names that people would recognize. But not with Ed Sanders. You're not ambivalent about him.
No, there's no ambivalent with me and Marshall McLuhan.
Oh, yeah, right.
Or Jaime Dangulo, or...
Who's that? Oh, Jaime, the guy back in Big Sur, 1950.
He was an inspiration to me. I mean, I have an ambivalent relationship about Lou Hill because he committed suicide.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, he was also very inspirational to me.
There are friends also that were friends that you don't like. You're not ambivalent. Like Gunther Weil or Richard.
Well, Gunther screwed us around pretty badly, and for greedy reasons. But, you know, and we were very close friends, and I didn't understand what happened to him.
Right, and Baba Ram Dass, maybe not as intense, but you're ambivalent.
No, he was never a friend of mine.
Oh, Richard. Okay.
Richard was always kind of, there was an antagonism because it mostly had to do with Steve Turkey.
Yeah. Who, are you ambivalent towards Steve?
No, not at all.
Though his life took a strange direction, I don't know if we mentioned it.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a terribly creative person no matter what he does. Even his position about between Jews and Muslims doesn't get to me. I mean, I think Steve is a wonderful human being.
He's Jewish, right? He was Jewish.
No. He started out as a Catholic altar boy.
And now he's a Muslim.
No, he's a Sufi.
Oh, Sufi. So he wanders around?
But that is him. That is Muslim.
Yeah.
Yeah, he translated the Quran.
But where is he now?
He's in West Virginia.
And what's he doing?
He's a Sufi itinerant preacher, according to him. His name is Noor.
How do you spell that?
N-O-O-R. Actually, it's Nuradin.
N-U? R-A-D-D-I-N?
N-O-O-R-A-D-I-N, I guess. Or D-E-E-N. Nuradin.
So if I put that in, you don't know if it's one D or two.
One D and two E's.
Oh, okay.
Nuradin. But you can put in Stephen Durkee. Find it. Or I can send you his email.
Right. The Somali members of parliament, no, Nuradin. Is that one word? N-O-O-R-A-D-E-N?
Hold on a second.
There's another Steve Durkee who's famous, but...
Nuradin, N-O-O-R-A-D-D-E-E-N.
N-O-O-R-A-D-D...
E-E-N. But the email is green, G-R-E-E-N-M-T-N, as in mountain, at pure, P-U-R-E... .net.
Is Durkee D-U-R-K-E-E? Under the direction of Sheikh A. Nuradin Durkee. Would he have the name the Green Mountain School?
Yeah.
So he adds the name Durkee to the Nuradin. And there's a picture of him. He's got a long beard.
Yeah.
Yeah, white blonde hair.
Yeah, right.
And, there's it's the Shadow Zulu School for Tranquility of Being and Illumination of Hearts. Sheikh A. Nuradin Durkee, director.
Right.
And when did he become a convert to Muslim? In the 60s?
No. Late 70s.
Okay, because it's odd looking at the picture of him. I've seen how he looked in the 60s on your movies, and well, he's so different.
Yes, he is.
So have you...
He came to the opening of Summer of Love at the Whitney.
So you saw him then?
Yeah, I've seen him 4 or 5 times in the last years.
Well, what do you guys talk about? Do you talk about the past?
Yeah, partially. We, you know, we're friends.
Right, but does he talk about what he's, his religion to you?
Sure. I mean, it's part of his life. It's most of his life.
Does he want you to convert?
No.
Does
he... No, not at all. No, we even spoke together.
Is that within the... You mean recently?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that within? Is that allowed in the Islam religion?
Sure.
Is that right?
Yes.
It's part of their sacred paraphernalia?
I don't know about that.
So,
well, I mean, that's where the hashishin came from, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, because this is the Sufi branch.
Yes.
Yeah, the Gurdjieffian, the...
Well, Gurdjieff was a little different.
Right, but this is the esoteric thread.
Yeah.
Do you know Hakim Bey, real name Peter Lamborn Wilson? Did you ever run across him?
No, just the names.
Yeah. Okay, well, what I guess we're going to end, and
yes.
we're going to do another conversation. I want to just talk as a mind with you about what's going on today. No more past, so to speak, and the past can come up, but I want to address you in a sense like the way Michael Callahan was interviewed.
We'll have to be after the 24th.
Okay, no problem.
All right.
So thanks for putting up for another 3 hours of memory lane.
I'm going to sleep. Hey, Scott, thank you very much.
Now, he's in the other
room. You're welcome. Oops.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Anyway, guys, I will see you in a few weeks.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Jerry.
But I will hear you. And thanks again. Be well.
Okay.
Guidance and protection, as we say in Jamaica.
Yes. When the way is made clear.
Yeah, and as Worcester would say, what does Worcester sign off with, Bob? Light around you and pass it on?
Yeah, what is it?
Light around you and pass it on. I think that's it.
Well, he says it to me. He said to me 1,000 times, and it's not just may the light be. Jesus, I don't know. It's something. It's the light around, circling light, or pass it on. And we've added to it lately, and hack it back and make the way clear. I keep adding it.
Okay.
But it's funny. He said it to him a million times. Yeah. Let the light be around you.
Lots of light around you.
Lots of light.
And pass it on.
Yeah, and pass it on. Okay, so let me call you back, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.